Pastor Mai, hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. Inquest verdicts show a rise in recorded suicides in the last year. A former politician who led a committee to investigate the issue wants to see government take action to address the troubling increase. Meanwhile, there's been a decade-long decline in the island's birth rate, according to a local statistician. Paul Crane's the author of the Isle of Man Population Atlas and has been crunching the numbers to reveal the trend. The number of suicide verdicts recorded at the end of an inquest rose steeply last year. In 2019, there were six. In 2020, there were 22 suicide verdicts. Former politician David Cretney chaired a Tynwald committee which examined the issue. He told Tim Glover the rise is concerning.
We were always told as a committee and by officials that we should look over a period of time. And I think that those figures that you've just described are significantly higher, even if you looked over a five-year period. And as such, that's got to be concerning. The report that we made to Tynwald followed on from an investigation into mental health on the island, which has always been a Cinderella service, hasn't been properly funded, hasn't got sufficient staff, too long people getting engaged. But not everybody who decides to take their own life is engaged with the mental health services anyway. So this is a very worrying aspect. And one of the principal recommendations of the report was that the Director of Public Health would collate figures, statistics, etc., and come back and a report would be given to Tynwald on an annual basis. Now, that's the first time that's happened. I don't know when they're planning to do that. We had the discussion in January last year. We're now in February. And so I hope sooner rather than later that the department were very positive in terms of supporting the majority of the recommendations and amending several, which we were happy with eventually because they compromised, we compromised a little just to make sure that the wording was correct. But now it's up to them to follow up the recommendations and hopefully a report will be issued to Tynwald where members are able to, again, make sure this item is on the agenda and one which has been talked about.
Do you feel there's enough urgency?
No, is a simple answer. I first raised the subject of people taking their own lives in 1993 in Tynwald after, as a Tynwald member, supporting a family. And the family had wanted to get their relation engaged in the mental health services. Mental health services at that time didn't think that that was necessary. Eventually, after being me contacting them several times, they did. He went in. He was kept in for several days. And then he was allowed to, as is obviously his right, he was allowed to go out and he came to Douglas Head and he took his own life. Now, that detrimentally affected me in terms of worrying about could I have done more? But also the families always in these situations, those who are left behind, have to deal with those kind of questions and there's guilt feelings. I felt guilty. Could I have done more? But the family who are closest to these people who sadly decide to take their own life, must have those feelings in duplicate.
One issue that I know you identified during the committee was the length of time between the opening of an inquest and then the final closure of an inquest. And this, I must emphasise, is 22 suicide verdicts.
Yes.
There will be others that are going to now go into the 2021 statistics.
Yes.
I know every I's got to be dotted and T crossed, but can more be done to speed that process up?
Well, we spoke to the coroner of inquests privately because obviously we didn't want in a public forum to be speaking about specific cases. And yes, that is the I went and spent some time in a coroner's inquest court with a family who invited me to do so. And this was a considerable time after they had lost a loved one. And I just think, apart from anything else, it kind of reawakens the trauma and the grief and the tragedy which they've already had to encounter some time previously. But yes, the point you make in terms of obviously all the inquiries have to be made in advance of a coroner's inquest, and it's very important that all the detail is gone into to make sure that the right verdict and the outcome is properly considered.
Could this be just the tip of the iceberg? Because we have just been through and are going through still an extraordinary period in history, and there's a lot of mental health pressure on youngsters in particular, but everyone really.
Yes, I was watching television the other night and about the United Kingdom, and clearly their situation is a lot worse than ours, but it has detrimentally affected people's mental health, young people and others. And I think we'd be wrong to assume that even though we're handling things a lot better here because of the borders policy, it'd be wrong to assume that people on the island haven't been detrimentally affected. One of the really good things that's come out, in my generation, males in particular wouldn't talk about these kind of things. But these days, there are a number of organisations and young people and sports personalities who encourage males to be prepared to speak about their experiences. And I think that's very good and very healthy that they are able, because, you know, professionals can then pick up any signs, hopefully, and work with people to try and encourage them to think about other ways of living their lives.
Just finally, physical health and mental health budgets within the health service are massively out of kilter with each other.
And that has always been, sadly, the case. I think, you know, this sounds a bit crude, but it's obvious if somebody has a broken arm or something like that. But if your mind is ill, it might not be a permanent thing, it might be just something you're going through. But if it is, it's not always obvious. And that's why sometimes people decide to take their own lives, and those around them had no idea why they had made that decision. So the budgets for mental health services needs to be increased substantially, and we need to have appropriate professionally qualified staff to support those services. Now, I'd be wrong to say that there haven't been any moves. I mean, the move in relation to the police having mental health professionals working with them at the front line has been a really good one. But what we need to do is make sure that the report that we made, which was on top of the mental health report, we need to make sure that the department, despite all the pressures it's under, make sure that it's carried through, because lives depend on it.
Former MHK and MLC David Cretney. The man behind the Bereaved Survivors of Suicide Isle of Man Facebook group says he's not surprised by the sharp rise in verdicts last year. Dave Higson lost his son Martin in 2018 and set up his support network in January of 2019. There are now 139 members of that network. Tim asked Dave for his reaction to the worrying rise in inquest figures.
Yes, compared to the previous year, I think there were six recorded in 2019. Yes, it's an alarming figure to see 22 people taking their own lives by suicide. And I think that we really need to have a look at the figures a bit more closely and try and establish, if we can, what the causes of those suicides were, and actually analyse the numbers and see if we can focus some efforts into addressing the problems, whichever direction that will take us.
Were you surprised at the numbers? Have you had an increase in people joining the bereavement group that you run?
Well, we set up the bereavement group in January 2019, and we've got currently 138 members since we started. So, yeah, we're seeing numbers increase as time goes by, yes.
And, of course, for each of those 22, there are family and friends who are affected by the loss.
Indeed, and it's a devastating loss. It's something that you hope's never going to happen to you or your family, and you think it might just happen to somebody else, and hopefully you can get through life that way, but you know, you've got to be realistic about these things. It affects everybody, every walk of life, and every family. So we really need to have a closer look at this. I mean, the figures may be connected with COVID and lockdowns or, you know, whatever issues. But we, you know, if that is the case, then we need to have a look and see what we can improve, definitely.
For those that are left behind, you obviously felt the need to fill a gap. Do you feel enough is done to look after people once they've gone through what they go through?
Well, speaking from my personal experience and the experience of the members in the group, basically they feel very let down by the resources that they're given and the help and support. And a lot of them are suffering from traumatic events and finding loved ones and PTSD. And, you know, they really do need some help. And there's just nothing, only our support group and crews at the moment to assist them. We definitely need somebody to take the lead and invest some money and some love, and also some investing time in people. You know, we need to look at our society to change this. It's just not right. It needs changing. And I think we should really look at our children in school are being taught how to cope with life issues, emotional issues, and given the tools to prepare them for when those issues come along, because everybody has trouble in life. And if you've no idea how to solve your problems or speak out to others, you know, it can be a very lonely place. And, you know, I just hope that one day we can eradicate the thought of suicide, that it's eradicated from our mental thoughts, and that it won't be a solution at all, because there's always going to be an answer to the problem that you've got. There's always a way out of your addictions or whatever your anxiety. There'll always be somebody to go to and to help you to get over and get on with your life. We need to invest in people in this island. We really do.
Just finally, I've often heard it described by yourself in the past and others that it isn't like any other form of grief when you lose someone.
Yeah, losing somebody to suicide, it's the worst grief that I've experienced in my life. It's like a bomb going off in you. It turns your life upside down. You know, you can't even get out of bed some days. You know, everything's just hard to process it. There's so many questions without answers. And you just, you know, you need support to deal with these things. You can't just do it all on your own, you know. And people who are bereaved by suicide are more likely to commit suicide in the future. And I think people need to understand that we're more at risk than the average person to take our own lives. And in that way, we need more support than ever. To get us through our grief process and get us on an even keel again.
Dave Higson of the Bereaved Survivors of Suicide Isle of Man Facebook group. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. It's harder than ever for young people to raise a family. That's the view of the author of the Isle of Man Population Atlas, as the decade-long decline in births on the Isle of Man continued to fall throughout 2020. Deaths also exceeded births by 278, giving the largest natural decline in numbers since the 1980s. Paul Crane says the population of the Isle of Man is looking vulnerable. He spoke to Lewis Foster.
These are the island's birth and death figures, and it's the birth figures within that that are probably the most news-making, I guess, because the decline in births that we've seen over the last decade has continued into another year. So if you take the big picture, in 2010, there were over 1,000 births. In 2020, there were just 660 births. So this is a decline of 35.5% in births over a 10-year period. Mm. And that is quite an extreme position, really, and it shows no signs of letting up.
And compared that to, say, 2019, is the decline falling at a similar rate, or is it accelerating, perhaps?
I would say it's falling at similar rates, slight variations in it. The decline from 2019 to 2020 was 7%. And so it hasn't slowed up in that sense. But if you look at a graph of it, it's a fairly straight downward line, really.
2020, quite an interesting year. Obviously, we'll all know we were affected by the pandemic. At the start, there was many headlines around the time saying they were expecting a baby boom, almost akin to what we saw after World War II. That's not been the case, though, you say. Why is that?
It doesn't appear to be the case. I think when the headlines came that we might see a baby boom, there was writers trying to tie in with the myth of the rise in births after the New York blackout of the 1960s and so on. And I don't think any of the serious demographic commentators were going with that. They were saying in developed countries, the uncertainty over health, over economy, over jobs and so on would lead people to not start a family. And as the years gone through, that group appeared to be saying that the early evidence of the numbers of pregnancies being reported in some countries, it appears to be expected now that as we move through 2021, we will see fewer births than usual, especially in developed countries. Maybe not so in some of the less developed countries, but the effect of COVID would appear to be a reduction in births, and there's an expectation that that could last for 3 or 4 years. So the Isle of Man's position in that, where we've had this big decline in births, the COVID position doesn't make it look likely that that's going to stop, you know, or be reversed by any sort of baby boom.
How do you feel potentially now that we're seeing vaccines coming, though, and lockdowns lifted, that kind of thing? Do you expect a rise at all this year or anything?
Well, it's difficult because there are such a range of other factors behind this. So internationally, we've been seeing in these last few years a very considerable drop in fertility. That's the number of the average number of children that a woman has. And that's been declining at a fast rate, indeed, such that there are more than 20 countries now that are projected to halve their populations before the end of the century. And so we're seeing this trend in falling fertility. We're seeing this trend in reduced births. There have been reduced births over the last decade in Northern Ireland, Scotland, England, Wales. Jersey in 2019 had their lowest births since 1982. And so we're seeing this decline in births. And that is to do with women around the world, especially in developed parts of the world, staying on in education, having more careers, choosing to reduce family size or not have a family and so on. Mm. So we're seeing that pattern is there. Specifically in the Isle of Man, we've got this between 2011, 2016. We know a large number of the 20 to 40 year group were moving out. For every one person in that age group that moved in, two had moved out. So we had a drop of maybe up to 40% in one of the age groups there. So when people of that age group leave, if you've got fewer women of childbearing age and they're having fewer children, your births will fall. So we've got a number of trends contributing to this.
You've described the state of the island's population as vulnerable at the moment, particularly with this net migration, as you mentioned, of young adults, particularly those aged 20 to 29. Myself, I've come onto the island in that age group, and there's two people, you know, you're saying for one of me, there's two people leaving at the same time. So how does that leave us in a vulnerable position?
We're vulnerable in a whole series of ways, and that's not a new term I'm using. When I produced the Isle of Man Population Atlas in 2016, I was using that term. We're vulnerable in terms of, in my lifetime here, I've seen periods of tremendous population decline. In the 1950s, we lost 12% of the population, big movement out. In the 60s and early 70s, we had big movement in. 71 to 76, we had 10,500 people moved into here. So we've seen that in the past. And we've seen periods where the population, the number of births have risen and then declined. And we've seen periods when there's been a great aging of the population. So we're now up in the top half dozen countries on the planet for over 65-year-olds. But in this position here now, the vulnerability of young people leaving and the births falling, we will see a gap like this, a fall of 35% in the number of births. In the island's population structure, the pyramid that you get showing the age and sex structure, That gap is still going to be there when this group are reaching 70 and 80, and it will affect the number of children they have. You know, okay, they'll be supplemented by movement in, and they will lose movement out over the years, but fundamentally a third fewer in this age group is going to pass up the pyramid. So it's going to be around for a long time, and it will affect us as that group would have been going into the economy. They're the people who would have been paying higher taxes, working, etc., the employed group of the future. They will be missing, you know. But if you imagine that it bounces back in the next few years, well, that might not make it so bad. But where we're at, there's no evidence that that's immediately around the corner.
So how do we look at bouncing back? Because you've mentioned here, according to the UN, two-thirds of countries in Europe have introduced incentives, measures to encourage people almost to have more children, to stay where they are. We've sort of recent headlines about struggle with first-time buyers, particularly on the island. Does that kind of thing concern you? Should we be looking at more incentives for young people?
Well, that clearly is a political decision at the end of it. I don't want to get too involved in the politics, but if you look at what's possible here, I don't think you can treat population issues in isolation. I think in piecemeal, if you try to sort of put in something that solves this problem, it'll create another problem. So we need a clear picture of what we're trying to achieve. You know, are we looking to grow the economically active population? Are we looking to grow the population? Do we want to improve the dependency ratios so that we haven't got so many older people in relation to the younger people? Because at the moment, we're growing the older population and we're seeing the younger population declining in every way. I think that the actions that we can take there, there's a range of them. If you look at the Intergenerational Fairness Report that came out in 2019, that looked at the 15 to 24 age group, I think it was. It was showing a 27% drop in incomes in real terms between 2005 and 2016. This is significant. You know, we've got the cost of living here, the cost of housing, and as you say, we've seen recent reports on the number of people struggling for accommodation in the Isle of Man, the cost of childcare. Talking to a young mum yesterday who's got a one-year-old in nursery 5 mornings a week, paying $800 a month. You know, is she going to have a second child anytime soon? She can't afford that. She's still working at the moment, but the money goes in that. So if you look, I think it's harder than ever for young people to be raising a family, and that's certainly true here in the Isle of Man. It's true more generally. And as time goes forward with this decline in fertility, people in this age group are going to be difficult to attract in because there's fewer of them elsewhere as well. So the vulnerability is there.
What positives can we take from this going forward?
Yeah, I think there are positives on a number of levels. I think, first of all, it's important to recognise that the Isle of Man is still a tremendously attractive place. I don't just mean in terms of the physical landscape. There's a tremendous community here. There's a tremendous sense of community. There's great work-life balance. There's opportunities to work for companies here that where your job will involve international travel, etc. You know, all of those here are real possibilities. And in that sense, it's an attractive place to bring up a family. It's an attractive place to relocate. There are many things going for it. And I think that, and there's also many excellent companies working here that give tremendous support and tremendous opportunities to young staff. You know, I think in terms of the other positives to it, it raises the whole question again of what should the population of the Isle of Man be. And that's why I'm saying we've got to go back to an overarching population policy on this. You know, are we trying to grow at any cost? Are we looking to be a little bit more cautious about that and a little bit more choosy about how we incentivise coming to the Isle of Man? Guernsey's already moved to the position where it is not wanting increased growth. You know, they're trying to reduce the growth there. Jersey has not reached that position yet, but the Isle of Man needs to look at this.
Paul Crane, the author of the Isle of Man Population Atlas. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen to this edition again via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify. But for now, gurumayu and goodbye.